And we this year decided we were going, when I say we, I mean me, decided that we were going to go through the book of Matthew. And so that's, if it looked like it was going to be a Christmas sermon, no, you're not late for the Christmas sermon. We're just going through the book of Matthew, and that happens to be where we are. So if you have your Bibles, if you'll go back to Matthew chapter 1, that's where we're going to be in just a minute. And at some point, we're going to have to land in Isaiah 7. So if you don't know where that is, you can go ahead and try to find that and put a mark there. In 2009 and in 2016, I moved to work for a new church. So 2009, I moved north, and 2016, I moved back south. Both times that I did that, that we showed up, members at both churches, they said, "We don't know anything about you." Neither time was I on Facebook. That I have blogs. I just didn't. I'm kind of on Facebook now, but not a whole lot. But at that time, you really, if you wanted to know who I was, it was going to be tough. I just didn't talk a lot about that, and I still really don't. When I was, 16, my dad taught me how to look for a job. He, told me that I should wear nice clothes and then go, ask for an application, and you should shake somebody's hand and look at them in the eye and introduce yourself, and you should go back and check on the job, and you should speak intelligently. I don't know if any of you have kids who are looking for jobs now. That's really not what we do. You do everything online. They actually just give your kids a test to see if they fit. They don't really care for an interview. They just want to see, how that works. In this age now, we tell everybody about ourselves, or at least we tell everybody what we want them to know. But maybe back when you were a kid or back when I was a kid, it's just not how it worked. People had to actually look to find out about you. It's a little frustrating when I can't find out about someone. I'll be honest with you. I don't want you to know about me, but I want to know about you. You'll see how that works? I want to know everything there is. And so it gets a little frustrating when you get to characters like Joseph. You don't know anything about this guy, and what do we know about him? Does anybody know anything about Joseph? Y'all in the same boat I am? You know nothing about Joseph. Do we know his job? Let's just pause here just for a second. Okay, it is okay to talk back. Okay, it is okay. I promise you, it is okay to talk back. I don't know. It's okay. I'm here. I got control. Okay, I got control. It's okay. What was Joseph's job? Okay, so at least two people up front are talking now. We're getting there. Two out of 250. All right, so he's a carpenter. And where's Joseph from? Bethlehem. Okay, so we got two things. All right, so he's a carpenter and he's from Bethlehem. Do we know anything else about Joseph? Okay, he's going to marry Mary. Okay, we got three. Anything else? Some of you are doing, what? Do what? He owns a donkey. Okay, so we're pulling at straws here. Okay, so we've got a carpenter from Bethlehem who owns a donkey. All right, but do you see the frustration here? We know nothing about this guy. And the thing is, he's Jesus's, what is he, the stepdad? Yes. So he's kind of like this earthly stepdad, kind of person. So we know nothing, and so it's extremely frustrating when you meet these people and you don't know anything about them. And so when you don't know anything about someone, usually, you make it up. In the 5th or 6th century, I don't know. There are only two copies of this left. One's in Arabic and one is in Coptic. It is another gospel that came out. It was called Joseph the Carpenter, and this is not inspired word. Okay. But it was a story called Joseph the Carpenter, and this gospel told the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey said, about Joseph. Let me share with you a few of the things. Is this true? I don't know. I'm just sharing what I know. This gospel said that Joseph lived to be 111 years old. Said that when he married Mary, he was already 60 years old. He'd been married before, but his wife died, so he was a widower. And he'd had 4 sons and 2 daughters in the previous marriage. And then when he got married to Mary, he had his kids from the other marriage, and then they had Jesus. Now, why did somebody write that story? One, because they don't have a lot of information, and they do what you and I do. They want to know more. The second reason is it's probably defending Mary's virginity. I don't know. But this is the kind of thing that they do. when you look at stories like this in Matthew 1 and you don't see a lot of details, the temptation is to try to find more or think of more. But what if that's the whole point? What if you are supposed to be satisfied with what God has given you, and that's it? Our temptation is to create more. Our temptation is to make more. But that's not what God wants you to do. He wants you to be content with what he has. If you want to find out about somebody, there's only three ways to get information. I mean, you can get on Facebook, but really there's only three ways to get information, okay? You have to listen to what they say. You have to watch what they do. And you can listen to what other people say. When I got hired here, y'all didn't have a whole lot to go on. So people would listen to my sermons from the other church, and I strategically went in and took out all the bad ones because I knew they were going to listen. So, you know, they would call, you know, why are some of these missing? I don't know. They just happened to leave. You know, I don't want those. So you have to listen to what the person says. You have to watch what they do. And I also know, I think the elders ran a credit check. Does the guy pay his bills? You know, hey, it's the hiring preacher world. You got to listen to what other people say. They called and interviewed people. They called and asked people. If I wanted to know about you and I asked other people about you, what would they say? This morning, when you look at Joseph, we don't know much about him, but here's what we know. We know he's righteous, right? And we know he's righteous because we watch Joseph balance law and love. If your wife sleeps with another man, you got to divorce her. That's what the law is. There's no way around it. You got to do it. You can't marry her. You got to try to remain holy. But Joseph balances that with love. He's got to divorce her, but he doesn't want anything bad to happen to her. Joseph is also obedient. You notice what Brother Parsons read. The angel came and said, "You're going to name him Jesus." And then Joseph named him Jesus. But there's a third thing about Joseph that Matthew tells us. Look at Matthew chapter 1. I told y'all to turn there. It'd be good if I turned there. Look at verse 22. Matthew chapter 1, verse 22. All this took place to fulfill what the Lord had said through the prophet. The virgin will be with child and will give birth to a son, and they will call him Emmanuel, which means God with us. My whole life, what I hear is that God is running the show, and what he wants to do is to show you that everything happened just as he predicted it. And he prophesied way back here in Isaiah that a virgin will be with child, and so he's making sure that that comes true. But I don't think that's what's happening at all. Y'all see that word fulfill in your Bible? I don't think the word fulfill means, you know, comes to fruition. The prediction is happened. You remember when Jesus said, "I did not come to abolish the law and the prophets, but to..." Do we all know that text? Okay, let's do it again. So Jesus said, "I did not come to abolish the law and the prophets. I came to fulfill." Okay, how do you fulfill law? You can't. Law is law. It's not a prediction. Law is law. So when Jesus says, "I didn't come to abolish the law, I came to actually fulfill it," it doesn't mean that I'm going to make it come true. What fulfill means is I'm going to fill it out. I'm going to show you what this looks like. That's what fulfill means. When it says the scripture was fulfilled or the prophecy was fulfilled, it means this is what it's supposed to look like. Jesus said, "Let me show you what the law looks like in me. Let me show you what the prophets look like in me." Now if you look at Matthew chapter 1 and what Matthew says, he says, all this took place to fulfill what the Lord had said through the prophet. What's going on with the prophet? If you want to turn to Isaiah 7, you have this weird story, and that's where you get this virgin story, Isaiah 7. Isaiah 7 has a lot to do with Joseph. You're going to see how in just a second. In Isaiah 7, you have this king, Ahaz, who's surrounded. He has a couple of guys to the north who have decided that they've made this pact and they're going to come and demolish his city. And so he's a little petrified. Everybody's ganging up on him. And Ahaz decides that when people gang up on you, what do? You go find somebody bigger. If you ever had somebody pick on you, if you've ever been bullied, the key is to find a bigger bully. or to go get your brother who's twice the size. That's always kind of the strategy. It's been the strategy for hundreds of years. Ahab's getting picked on. Ahab knows his number's up, and so Ahab decides, I need to go get help. I'm going to run to Assyria, and I'm going to solicit them to come help me. When I was, I don't know, six, maybe? Yeah, had to have been. I started kindergarten. And I thought the coolest thing about kindergarten was that I get to buy lunch. That's back when lunch was, I think, 20 cents. And now at my kid's school, lunch is like, I don't know, $82, you know, for one meal. But obviously I'm exaggerating. It's like 45. But it was like 20 cents. I was so excited. I remember being so excited. And why, I don't know. The food was terrible. You know, it's like eating Play-Doh. You know, not now. I mean, it was then. And I remember it was like cold tacos and stuff like that. But hey, I got to eat what I want, right? So my dad would give me a dollar. And the dollar got me all week. So it was, to me, I didn't have any, you know, I'm a kindergartner and I'm actually getting to carry money. Now, that was back when a dollar was like a real dollar. It was like, you know, it could buy you 5 days worth of food. After a week, there was a guy who was coming through. And he was literally taking our lunch money. You know the old saying, you know, you got your lunch money stolen? Yeah, I literally got my lunch money stolen. But we ate with first and second graders, and I think the second grader looked like he was, you know, turning into a senior. You know, he already had facial hair, you know, that kind of thing. So I was terrified. But he came through, and he would literally walk through the line and hold out his hand for money. And I didn't know what he was doing. Then he came to me, and he held out his hand. I said, and I just went. And he said, no. He said, I need your lunch money. I said, well, how will I eat? And he said, I don't care. I was 6 years old. I was 30 years ago. I still remember that. This kid says, I don't care. And I thought, I looked around and I thought it was a joke. It wasn't a joke. And it was the first and last time I ever let somebody take my lunch money. I went and sat at a table and I told my dad about it. And my dad gave me some advice. I didn't follow it. The table I was sitting at was also other second graders. I was kindergartners and second graders. There was a bigger second grader. So I came to him. My dad gave me another dollar. So I went to that second grader, and I said, I'll pay you a dollar to make sure he doesn't take my lunch money. That was a good strategy. Problem is now I don't have a dollar to buy lunch again because I just paid it. So I paid the kid, and I don't know how I still bought lunch, but the next day, the guy that I paid came to me and said, you got another dollar? And I said, no. And so then he told the other kid to go take my lunch money again. It all just kind of backfired, you know? Here I am, 6 years old, trying to make it in the big world. I keep getting my money taken. This is what happens. You go to somebody bigger, and you go try to make a deal with somebody. And it's going to backfire. Every time you try to go above somebody, you try to make a deal over here, we try to do this over here, it just gets worse. You ever told a lie and then try to cover it up with another lie? You know, you were in deep, now you're even deeper. Ahaz has a problem, and he thinks what he should do is find a bigger second grader to take care of these two guys. And in Isaiah 7, Ahaz goes down to the pool, and he's a little upset, and there stands Isaiah. And Isaiah tells him three things. He says, calm down. Be still. Don't be afraid. And I want you to listen to what he tells Ahaz. He says, Ahaz, these two guys are nothing. You give them 65 years, they'll be gone. Does anybody find something odd about that? How would you like a prophecy like that? You having trouble with cancer? Don't worry about it. Give it 15, 20 years, it'll be gone. Don't worry about it. Anybody like an answer like that to your prayers? You having trouble with your kids? Don't worry about it. Give them 30 years. They'll grow up, right? You having trouble kind of managing your retirement? Don't worry about it. Give it about 50 years. You'll finally start saving money. Anybody like that answer? That's what he tells Ahaz. These two guys are nothing. I mean, they're like little bitty matchsticks. They're nothing. Give them 65 years. It'll all blow over. And Ahaz says 65 years. 65 years. I mean, so let me get this straight. I can trust you, and we're going to get sacked, but we're going to live through it. Or I could cut a deal over here, and maybe have an option of not having to go through the pain. And God says, oh, that's not an option. You're going to go through the pain. Did y'all know that the amount of faith that you have will not get you out of whatever predicament you're in? Did you know that no matter how long or no matter how many prayers you say, it is not a guarantee that it will make your problems go away? None of it is. Your faith is not tied to results. And God tells Ahaz, he says, ask me for a sign. Ask me. Go ahead. And Ahaz says no. And God says, well, I'll give you one anyway. You see this girl? You see this girl right here? She's going to give birth. And this is how you know I'm telling you the truth. Because they're going to come in and sack you. They're going to demolish your city. But they're not going to kill you. And you know how you know that? Because she's still going to be alive. And she's going to give birth to a child. And the child's going to eat curds and honey. And if y'all don't know what that is, that's like ramen noodles, okay? That's like our ramen noodles, all right? That's how poor we all are going to be, is that the child's going to eat curds and honey. But every time you look at this child, I want you to remember, I'm with you. No matter what you do, no matter what happens, I'm with you. Every time you look at the child, I'm with you. And that's faith. Faith is not believing that everything's going to go away. Faith is believing that God won't go away. That's faith. One of the scariest moments of my life, I've told you about it before. You know, I don't have that many scary, besides being 6 years old and getting your lunch money taken. One of the scariest moments of my life happened in the open seas on a sailboat. And in a pretty big storm with my grandfather. And I remember we got in two or three storms, and in the second storm, I remember one of the questions he asked. It was getting pretty rough, and he was taking a nap, and I woke him up, and I said, hey, it's getting pretty rough. And he said, but you don't see any rats, right? And I said, I hope not. Do we have rats? And he said, I don't think so, but if we did, you just want to watch for them. You know, them are mice. You just want to watch for them. And I thought, I hope not. Are we going to eat them? I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Now I'm panicking. You know, we have mice. The really, really bad storm we got in was a cyclone with no land in sight. And I remember it was so bad. I remember my grandfather sweating with anxiety. And he came up out of the downstairs, and he looked at me and he said, you hadn't seen any rats, have you? And I said, do you know something I don't? Do you have a pet rat? He said, rats or mice, it doesn't matter. You ain't seen them, have you? I said, no. I said, why? He said, rats jump ship if the seas get too rough. And I said, why would they do that? He said, because they're stupid. And I said, so why are you asking? And he said, because if rats jump ship, they have something inside of them that God has given them that is letting them know it is better to jump ship than to go down with the ship. So if you ever see rats or mice, it means they're leaving and they're jumping into the water to drown themselves. And I thought, well, that's comforting. Not only am I scared for the storm, now I'm looking for mice. And, you know, and if you see the mice, that's actually a bad thing. The storm was pretty bad. And I remember like 15 years later seeing my grandfather at Christmas. And I said, hey, I never told you, but I saw rats that night. But I didn't want to tell you. And he said, why? And I said, well, because if you started to panic, then we were all gone. And he looked at me and he said, you know, I never told you this, but I saw the rats too. And I said, well, why didn't you tell us about it? And he said, same reason. He said, I knew if I panicked, you'd panic. And somebody had to hold the ship. Let's go back to Joseph. What do we know about Joseph? Did you know in Matthew's gospel, the angels don't talk to Mary? They talk to Joseph. You ever wonder why that is? Did you know that every time something happens, the angel goes to Joseph? And the reason is, somebody's got to hold the ship. I think God knew that Joseph would trust him, even though he wouldn't make it go away. Did y'all notice this? If you look at here in chapter 1, look at verse 20. He said, after he considered this, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream, and it said, Joseph, son of David, don't be afraid to take Mary home as your wife, because what is conceived in her is from the Holy Spirit. She will give birth to a son, and you are to give him the name Jesus, because he will save his people from their sins. Did y'all notice what he didn't say? I want you to go home, and we're going to retroactive the delivery date, so when the baby's due, it'll actually look like it's yours, right? Or how about this? I want you to take her home, and nobody's going to say anything about Mary. Nobody's going to say anything bad about a pregnant girl who got pregnant out of wedlock. Do you notice he didn't give him those guarantees? Joseph and Mary still had to live through the scandal. Joseph and Mary still had to live through the pain. God never promised Joseph, it's all going to be okay. We're going to work it all out. All he told Joseph was, I got it. And as long as you see him, I'm with you. As long as you see the child, I'm with you. And to Joseph, that was enough. God's going to come back to Joseph in chapter 2. Herod's going to go on a killing spree. He's going to kill off all the baby boys. And God comes back to Joseph and he says, hey, I know there's a lot of bloodshed. I'm going to need you to do something again. And Joseph holds the ship. And then God comes to him again. And he's got to move. He's got to be a foreigner. And Joseph holds the ship. What will people say about me and you? What will they say about me and you? Will they say that we trusted God even though we didn't know what was going to happen? Or will they say we were rats? And that we'd rather drown than trust God? When I moved here, right before I moved here, let me back up. So when we moved to Maryland, when I got there, the guys who were elders had just become elders. There was a guy named Chuck, and then we had three other guys who were just installed as elders like 2 weeks before I got there. They'd never been elders. And I hadn't preached in like 5 or 6 years. So they had a preacher who was really untested at that point. We had new elders who'd never been elders before. And so it was those four and me. I called us the Fab Five. They rolled their eyes every time I said it, but I said it anyway. So I said, you know, it's the Fab Five. And so we all kind of together learned how, you know, how to lead a church and how all that worked. And over time, one of the elders, you know, moved away, and we got another one, and then he quit. But those five, us five, we kind of felt like was a special group. We kind of started together. 5 weeks before I moved here, Chuck got an infection. And then he got pneumonia. And then he got sepsis. And then severe sepsis. And then he lapsed into septic shock. And I had just, the day I announced I was leaving, and when I announced to that church, I said, you know, I'm resigning. You heard this audible gasp. You know, I thought in the age of Facebook, surely everybody knows I'm leaving. No, nobody knew. And it was this gasp, and it was the same day that Chuck slipped into septic shock. And so we were, up north, we were just reeling. And I drove to D.C. to go to the hospital to see Chuck. And I walked in, and I see his wife. And I look over the rail, and there's one of our elders. And then I go down there to see him, and the elder who'd moved away, he drove back to see Chuck. And I said, hey, we're getting the band back together. And then us three went upstairs, and lo and behold, the other elder came out of the hallway. And so us four went into the room of this dying man. And I knew he was going to die. I knew. Some of you have lost family. You know septic shock. If you get septic shock, it's the fall that kills you. And I was praying over Chuck, and then I was talking with Chuck, and then Mike, who's kind of the head elder, he looked at Chuck, and he started to talk about the elders' meeting that they were having. I said, Mike, what are you doing? He said, I got to keep him informed. I said, about an elders' meeting? You know, he's telling him about, you know, we had a toilet overflow, and, you know, we had to get that mopped up. And I said, Mike, what are you doing? He said, I got to keep him informed so that when he comes back. I said, Mike, he ain't coming back. And I said, he's going to die. And I even preached the sermon because we were preparing for his death, and then I had to move. And I looked at Mike, this other elder, and he wasn't sweating. He wasn't sweating. And he got up there and he told the church, he said, church, it's going to be okay. And as long as I'm here, you got an elder. You come to me. And I remember thinking at that moment, I want to be you when I grow up. I want to have that faith. That no matter what, no matter what happens, no matter the shock, no matter the trivial nature, no matter what, we hold the ship. We hold it. Because there's nothing else we can do. God looked at Ahaz and he says, if you don't stand firm, you're not going to stand at all. This morning, if you're not a Christian, your pain is not any different from mine, okay? If you're a Christian, it doesn't mean you're any less likely to get cancer. So if you're not a Christian this morning, I can't offer you an easier life. I can't offer you a life that's not going to be, that you won't be infected. I can't offer you that. But here's the only difference. If you're not a Christian this morning, you're going to go through it alone. And you will go down with the ship. You're going to do it alone. But if you are a Christian, you have someone who can be with you through it. He can be with you through it. So this morning, God's with you. Are you with Him? And if you do not stand, we will not stand at all. So let's stand and sing.